Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include EuropaCorps, with the new thriller Miss Sloan, starring Jessica Chastain. In the high-stakes world of politics, Elizabeth Sloan is the most feared power broker in D.C., but learns that winning comes at too high a price. Now playing in select theaters.
President-elect Donald Trump says he will repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. With what? That question and answer, hopefully, coming up. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and our WJCT app. Just ahead, your calls on the future of the Affordable Care Act. What are your questions? Get on the line right now at 549-2937. Then later, let's move Jacksonville, aims to get this city and its kids more fit and healthy. We'll tell you about it. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, it was one of the hallmarks of Donald Trump's campaign for president, a promise to repeal the Affordable Care Act, a legislative milestone of President Barack Obama's administration. Now, in his contract with the American voter, President-elect Trump has vowed again to repeal the ACA, or Obamacare, within the first 100 days of his administration. But although Trump's administration could make parts of the legislation difficult for those trying to enroll, experts believe a full legislative repeal will be more difficult to accomplish. So what's the future look like for health care insurance, including here in Florida, under the Trump administration? We're going to begin the hour with a closer look as we welcome Pat Garrity, CEO of GuideWell and Florida Blue. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Also with us in studio, Dr. Alan Harmon. He's past president of the Florida and Duval County Medical Associations and member of the AMA's Council on Medical Service. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa.
And here's our question to callers. When it comes to President-elect Trump's vow to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, what do you think about that? And what are your questions for our two experts here in studio about what we can expect under a Trump White House? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show. We're already getting your tweets and your comments on Facebook. We'll get to those in just a few moments. But first, Pat Garrity, let's begin with you. Florida Blue moved aggressively with the passage of the Affordable Care Act to offer insurance plans under the federal exchange in every one of Florida's counties. Now that Donald Trump has been elected president, he's vowing a very different picture for health care coverage. What are your expectations for what the Trump administration might do, and how is Florida Blue going to react?
Well, Melissa, first of all, our mission at Florida Blue is to help people and communities achieve better health. So it was very much in keeping with our mission to go into all counties in Florida and provide coverage through the Affordable Care Act. It was the law of the land. Now, we always felt like some of the provisions of the Affordable Care Act should be changed. Mm-hmm. And so now I think we have an opportunity to make some of those changes. How far those changes will go is what we'll really see over the next coming months. But we believe that we can work with any administration if that administration cares about covering as many people as possible and providing affordable quality health care. We're open.
Now, one of the vows Trump has made is to permit states to sell health insurance across state lines to allow more competition. How would that affect your business?
I don't think that affects our business in Florida very much at all. We already have the national players here. We already have a highly competitive marketplace. And frankly, if you kind of break that one down, mm-hmm. if we were looking at someone coming from outside the state and they're coming into Florida, I cover 5 million people in the state of Florida. If someone's going to come with a new plan that covers no one, I don't know that they're going to be able to negotiate price at a hospital or with physicians that will be better than the prices that we put out there. So I don't see that changing our marketplace very much at all.
Dr. Harmon, we are learning this morning that President-elect Trump has announced that he would like to appoint Representative Tom Price, Republican of Georgia, to lead HHS, to be the Health and Human Services Secretary. This congressman has already put forth a plan to completely dismantle the Affordable Care Act. So certainly changes are on the way. As past president of the Florida Medical Association, what are your thoughts about the future for health coverage in Florida? What do you think should be done in terms of making these changes, which are certainly expected?
The first thing is that we're focused on taking care of the patient. That's what our, you know, vow is that we took when we became physicians. And it's always been a bedrock that we want to help physicians practice medicine and that we want to have patients have access to high-quality health care at an affordable price. I happen to know Tom Price personally. I've worked with him for about a decade at the AMA, and he is a very bright man who has a very good grasp of the real fundamentals, and he is going to try to expand competition. Competition is the bedrock of what makes America's healthcare system really work at its best. When you have a monopoly on a drug, or you have a monopoly in any other area, whether it be hospital systems or insurance or whatever it may be, then that works against the patient. We are patient-centric in our organization and physician-centric.
Let me ask you as well about the state's LIP, its low-income pool. Senate Health Policy Committee Chairman Aaron Bean says, with the election of Donald Trump, there might be a change when it comes to Florida's annual scramble for how to cover low-income patients. Let's take a quick listen to what he had to say.
I am optimistic. It may not be called LIP. It may be called something else. But we need our health system, if people or may not know it, is based on payments from the federal government that goes to these hospitals. These hospitals are expensive to run, but they save lives and they treat patients.
Okay. And as we wait to see what happens with that, Pat Garrity, what are the political ramifications as we look at these changes, which everyone is waiting to see what the details are? But politically, how can this new administration take away a benefit that has been given or has been made more available, health insurance, for some 20 million Americans without having a viable alternative?
Yeah, I think it's one thing to run on a platform. It's another thing to govern. And so I think we've seen already that the Trump administration is looking at taking their time about what the replacement plan looks like, because I think we have to be thoughtful about how we navigate through that process. You literally have 20 million people who gain coverage through the Affordable Care Act. It would be political suicide to just cut them loose. So we have to figure out what that transition looks like and really gets to how will you finance that. And I think the Trump administration would rather not do that through subsidy. They'd rather do that through tax credits, and they'd look for other ways to finance, say, a high-risk pool. And so that process is going to take a fair amount of work and strategy, and I don't think it happens overnight.
Dr. Harmon.
Yes. I agree that the Trump administration and Tom Price will be looking at advanceable refundable tax credits as the basis of how they're going to proceed. With regards to cutting off the people that are insured, I do believe that that will be something that will be a non-starter. I also want to remark, though, that we've had patients who have had insurance before who lost their insurance with the current robust plans that are only available on the exchanges. So those individuals have lost their coverage, so we need to find a way to help them be insured. With regards to the low-income pool, you know, that's always been a issue back and forth between the federal government and Barack Obama and even our governor. And they had a fight over the low-income pool this last year. Overall, our local hospital, University of Florida Health, is very dependent on outside funding because of their patient pool. And so I'm very supportive of finding a way to support our safety net hospitals.
Melissa, if I could say, you know, I alluded earlier that we already supported a number of changes. This was called the Affordable Care Act, but it had a lot of taxes in it. And those taxes get passed on to the consumer. So I think the taxes in the law will have to be reviewed. We also were squeezed in terms of how we could rate. So the rating gap is 3-1, meaning your lowest price and your highest price couldn't have a separation of more than 3-1. That means young people subsidize older people. Before the law, we had a 7-to-1 rating band, and that allowed younger people to get a lower price. And we all know you have to have young people in the pool in order for the pool to have a spectrum of risks, right? So that's the way an insurance pool works. We squeezed that, and that really hurt pricing. So a number of things here have the opportunity to create greater flexibility, as the doctor just alluded to, and bring healthier risks into the pool. And so I think there's promise here. We just have to do it thoughtfully.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, as we discuss the future of the Affordable Care Act under a Trump administration. What are your questions? What do you think? Give us a call at 549-2937. Jerry is in Arlington this morning. Hey, Jerry, good morning to you.
Hey there, how are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for calling.
I got called in to voice my opinion that the Affordable Care Act needs to be completely gotten rid of. Frankly, I'm a little bit out of breath right now. Just got out of my car. For one thing, it created a constitutional crisis. The Supreme Court decision, first paragraph in it, specified specific that the mandate mandating the people purchase insurance is not something the government had the authority to do. And then Justice Roberts flipped and used a vague ruling from a California case saying that the court has an obligation to try to, quote, save legislation from unconstitutionality. Well, frankly, the purpose of the Supreme Court is to save the people from unconstitutional laws. And basically what he did is the equivalent of a backflip through the flaming eye of a needle by saying that they would reinterpret the mandate.
They reinterpreted it as a tax, essentially.
They reinterpreted it as a tax.
And they gave the, you know, they upheld the government's broad authority to tax, essentially. But, Jerry, I appreciate you bringing that up. What about, thank you for that call. And so, yes, Chief Justice Roberts, with his prevailing opinion, upheld the Affordable Care Act. The court wasn't expected to do that several years ago because they determined that the mandate was essentially a tax. And as Jerry pointed out, many Americans saw that as threading a very microscopic needle. So what about the element of the mandate, the individual mandate, which opponents of the act, Doctor, have always opposed?
The individual mandate and the mandate in the employers is a bit problematic for us philosophically. We don't like the individual mandate per se, but we also understand that the system only works if you have a competitive, affordable price where you have a demand for the product, and so that patients will purchase a product that they consider to be of value. And right now what we're seeing is they don't consider it to be of value. Mandating it won't work. It's never worked in America to mandate Americans to purchase a product.
What about the countervailing argument, Pat Garrity, that all of the popular pieces of this, covering people with pre-existing conditions, letting kids stay on their parents' plan until they're in their mid-20s, the Obama White House has always argued that you can't have the good stuff without the less popular stuff. It all works together. If you start dismantling pieces of this, you're not going to be able to keep the more popular elements.
Yeah, I think using a mandate was one tactic, if you will, for trying to make sure that you hold the market together. I do think there are other ways of approaching that. One of them would be requiring continuous coverage. So what we find now is that people take coverage right before they have a healthcare crisis, and then they drop their coverage after it. And think about any business. If someone was allowed to purchase that, have their care, which is many, many times more expensive than the premiums they paid into the system, and then leave, what they're doing is they're pushing their cost onto everybody else. So in order to have some fairness in the system, really requiring people to be covered continuously, which actually is the right thing for somebody's health anyway. You want people to be getting continuous care throughout their life so that we have less of these acute high-end services, and we're actually keeping people healthy in the first place.
Let's go to Amanda on the South Side now. Hi, Amanda. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Hi. Yes, good morning. I was just wondering if they decide to just completely wipe away the Affordable Care Act, what does that mean for the taxes? So do we still have this mandate where we now have to pay if we don't have insurance when tax season comes around, or are they getting rid of that as well?
We're going to have to wait and see. Thanks for that question, though. Doctor.
I agree. It'll be a situation where we have to see what's in the legislation. I don't believe that a Republican administration would allow you to keep the mandate tax in and then roll everything else out. I think it would have to be a balanced approach.
Liz is in Jacksonville. Hi, Liz. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I had a physical therapy practice for 10 years, and I was involved in everything, including the billing. And the thought of purchasing insurances across state lines gives me nightmares. Because in order for a provider to accept somebody's insurance, we first have to get into network, which requires a lot of paperwork, a lot of contracts. We have to find out what their fee schedule is, all this sort of thing. Not only that, but if you get a cheap policy from North Dakota and you go to your doctor in Jacksonville, is that doctor going to be in network? I mean, I think whoever comes up with this idea of purchasing insurance from all over does not understand how the system works. It's not retail. So what do you think about that?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Liz. Okay. How would that work, Pat Garrity? This is something that Donald Trump has repeatedly said he wants to do, allow insurers to sell plans across state lines. Liz is saying it's not feasible. What do you think?
I actually think that what Donald Trump means is that he means competition. I think Liz is exactly right. As long as you have a competitive marketplace, this isn't a significant concern. Florida has a highly competitive marketplace, and therefore I don't think that's an issue in our state. But if you take that and think about what it means to sell across state lines, to her point about having coverage that's based out of North Dakota, you're talking about taking and interfering with the state's right to regulate insurance in their state. Now, the Republican Party has long stood for states' rights against the federalism of central control. So I think that concept is going to take a lot of debate in Washington, because I would think that what we're going to see is more power coming to the states to control and regulate what happens in their state.
Dr. Harmon.
I agree. The thrust here is for competition. The second thing is physicians are very much concerned. In Florida, we've worked very hard to get patient and physician protections, prompt pay laws, certain coverages for patients, such as preventative services. I would hate to see us lose those protections for doctors and patients because another state had a different set of standards. So if they could sell across state lines, then we would be subject to whatever lower standards another state or higher standards another state may have.
Melissa, if I could add, Dr. Harmon and I have
that sounds like chaos to me, but go ahead, Pat.
We Dr. Harmon and I had this discussion earlier. It's competition on both sides of the coin. So there's competition between health plans, certainly, but we also need competition in the medical marketplace. If you have a single a hospital system, they get to control the price in their marketplace. That's not good for the consumer either. So we really do need competition across the markets.
And if you're just tuning in right now as we speak with Pat Garrity, CEO of GuideWell and Florida Blue, and Dr. Alan Harmon, past president of both the Duval County and Florida Medical Associations, we are taking your calls, tweets, emails, Facebook comments about the Affordable Care Act's future under a Trump administration. A couple more of your calls, then we'll get to a few of your social media comments. Let's go to Mike in South Point right now. Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm kind of surprised by a couple of things here. This whole debate seems to be very one-sided and very pro whatever Trump is planning and pro whatever rolling back Obamacare, which, you know, you can list out the things you like and don't like about it all. But the flat reality is, prior to Obamacare, insurance sucked. Insurance sucked for a lot of reasons. You ever try waiting on a phone call, trying to get a hold of somebody to deal with a plan or an issue? Now, we still have that, but I will say that I have a lot less of that now than I did before.
What do you have now? Mike, what do you have now?
Yeah. I've got the same work insurance that I had before. it seems that we have actually more coverage with a wider range of things. I don't have the a good example. In pre-Obamacare, I had a situation where a doctor wanted to prescribe me a certain medication. My insurance wouldn't cover it. And he went round and round saying, but he needs this medication. Sorry, we don't cover it. And, you know, where do you, these problems are the kind of problems that need to get solved. And they're not going to get solved by competition. It's like these guys don't have any concept of the paperwork that the average person has to deal with, or the things that the average person confronts in this quote unquote competitive marketplace. Here's the reality that's going to happen is you're going to roll back Obamacare, and you're going to have the largest part of you keep calling them risk pool. Let's call them what they are, a bunch of elderly people on Medicare who desperately need medical services. And I'm surprised that nobody's mentioned Paul Ryan's plan, things that have been floated in the past 24 hours about rolling back and privatizing Medicare, which is a part of this whole medical conversation.
Okay.
That's what's coming down the pike. These people are going to have less coverage, it's going to cost more, and it's going to require more effort for the consumer to wade through and deal with this stuff on the back end. And I want to hear some comments
Thanks,
on that.
Mike.
Thank
okay. you so much. Let's take his points one by one. Both of you, if you could respond to what he's saying, this concern that whatever changes happen will result in a skimpier safety net, not just for the bulk of the insured population, but also seniors who might be looking at changes to Medicare. And also, what about his point of view as a consumer, that it's just dealing with insurance paperwork and dealing with this system is a nightmare? I know that's something you both hear a lot about.
As a physician, I can tell you that the amount of paperwork that we deal with has always been not in proportion to the amount of work that we do. Our paperwork has gone up exponentially. The care of the patient has gone up gradually over time, the things that we have to do for the patients, the new breakthroughs, treatments that we can offer. When you talk about Medicare and Obamacare, remember, these are distinctly separate. You're talking apples and oranges. So let's stay on the topic of the Affordable Care Act.
Oh, no, I want you to respond to that because Speaker Ryan has talked about essentially voucherizing Medicare.
Right.
And so what about that?
That part, they're talking about creating some more competition. That's all it, and it's also about having—
But it would essentially be a voucher given to seniors to go and purchase a plan.
Correct. That's what he's talking about. The voucher, the intent would be that the voucher would purchase the traditional standard product, and that would be covered. If you want extra, such as Medicare Advantage plans will offer extra benefits, then you would pay extra for that. You would get the voucher that would pay for the basic plan, and the others would be on you. Mm-hmm. I have that right now. I'm on Medicare, so I understand intimately how it works and how the income adjustment works. So there are a lot of moving parts that it's not that simple. It's a very complex issue.
I realize that, but Pat, when we look at these two topics, I understand what the doctor is saying. They're structured differently, but I think concerns and questions about the future of both of these programs are something that is, for millions of Americans, it's on people's minds.
Absolutely. But first, Melissa, I need to clarify something in the call. So when we talk about the Affordable Care Act, the Affordable Care Act is not a high-rated risk pool because seniors, Medicare eligibles, are in the pool. They're not in the pool at all. So just factually, the Affordable Care Act does not apply to those who are Medicare eligible. That's one. Two is if you were getting your coverage from an employer and you continue to get your coverage from an employer, you had very little impact from the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act is almost wholly about individuals. So any change in services before and after the Affordable Care Act because you were with an employer were really related to you could keep your kids to age 26. And it even pre-existing didn't apply in the employer marketplace. So it is a very complicated world when you start to talk about healthcare. The individual marketplace is very different than the senior marketplace. People have a right to be concerned about each of these marketplaces and their financial viability into the future. I am not saying the world we're moving into is going to be great. We don't know all the detail to understand how it will play out. We know today that the market we created brought a lot more people into coverage, brought a number of people in for first-time coverage. And so that was a good thing. We also know that it had too much tax, that it had too much restriction on benefit, that it had too much restriction on how you could rate, and therefore you didn't have the flexibility to give people what they wanted. And so that became burdensome. I happen to know that Democrats wanted to make some changes to that, but we never got to the debate about how to improve the law that we had. Now we're looking at how do we start over. And so pragmatically, we have to dig in, work with the people who are in charge, and figure out how to start over so we balance all of these programs.
Lots of tweets, emails, Facebook comments. Here are a few of your tweets. With Obamacare, we are just funneling public money to private companies. How is this better than universal coverage? Adam tweets the show. How can we fix the in-out-of-network fiasco that consumers face? Why not force providers to be in-network? From Susie on our Facebook page. Ask your panelists to address uncompensated hospital care and how these costs are covered currently and the implications of repealing the ACA. Doctor, so many questions people have, and we simply don't have all the answers.
Well, that's part of it. But in terms of the uncompensated hospital care, that's where your low-income pools and other things. And also, as Mr. Garrity will tell you, the cost shifting has been a burden that insurance companies have been fighting for years, and that's where a lot of the uncompensated care is covered. So I also want to make it very clear. We are not advocating, and I don't believe Mr. Garrity is advocating, that all of the Affordable Care Act be blown away. What we're saying is, for years, everyone has wanted to make improvements, and because of the political situation in Washington, no improvements were possible. Now we have a reset button that's been pushed. We have a chance to actually make progress and address all of these complex issues, but it's going to take time. It's not a simple one fix all.
I agree with that entirely, and I would also say to you that it's interesting that from the Affordable Care Act, a company like ours, which is a not-for-profit mutual insurance company, was able to get by, if you will. We were able to have success. We have almost 700,000 members. We're enrolling now somewhere between 200,000 and 300,000 members because we were complying with the law and trying to do the best job we could. The publicly traded companies are the ones that are dropping out. You see the Aetnas and the Uniteds, because they could not make money in the Affordable Care Act, exiting. So it's interesting that the market is very different. And I will add to this that I did a trip with a delegation from Minnesota prior to coming to Florida to Germany, a system that has 300 insurers across their country, and they don't have a single payer, and they operate at 11% of GDP. So it wasn't about having a single payer that got them to an answer. It was a lot of other things in their system, and everyone in their country is insured.
We're getting emails about single-payer health care, by the way. But let me take one more call. It's Ann in Arlington. Hi, Ann. Good morning.
My concern is about pre-existing conditions. I am individually employed. I do not belong to a group. I don't have one I can belong to. And when I called Florida Blue before Obamacare, because I had been recently told that I had type 2 diabetes, which is totally under control now by diet, but I was told that they would not insure me, period. They would not sell it to me under any condition. This is a big concern I have, and they keep saying, well, it's going to take time and it's going to need fixing. But that's not what Mr. Trump says. He says he's going to eliminate it within the first 100 days. That's not time. And I may find myself with no not qualified for insurance again.
All right. Thanks, Ann. Pat.
Well, I'm not here to defend the Donald Trump plan. What I am telling you is what we know. And what we know today is that they're not going to make broad changes and have a replacement plan in place. They may announce that they're going to remove the Affordable Care Act, but with a date in the future, number one. Number two, what we've heard and we hear repeatedly is they don't want to change the pre-existing condition exclusion. The fact of the matter is insurers didn't like the pre-existing condition exclusion, but it was the only tool we had when the marketplace could select without any requirement to be in the market.
Physicians strongly support the concept that we have elimination of pre-existing conditions to eliminate you from the being insured. So that is one of our very strong tenets.
Lots more to discuss on this program as we continue to follow it. In the meantime, we thank you both so much for being with us. Pat Garrity, CEO of GuideWell and Florida Blue. Dr. Alan Harmon is past president of the Florida and Duval Medical Associations. Gentlemen, thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead, including how Bright Holidays is helping local kids this Christmas and holiday season. But up next, let's move Jacksonville, trying to get the 904 fit. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist. Giving Tuesday, a global day dedicated to giving back. We encourage your participation in Giving Tuesday by donating to WJCT. Your contribution will help us continue to provide quality programs that inspire, engage, and educate the citizens of the First Coast. Thank you.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a general election recount is underway in Wisconsin, led by Green Party candidate Jill Stein. And President-elect Donald Trump says millions voted illegally in three other states. Charges of election fraud and whether recounts could affect the outcome of the presidential election. Weekday mornings at 10 on 89.9.
Independent music transcends genre, form, and age. At Indie Endeavor, we endeavor to shine a light in the little explored dark corners of your musical imagination. Everything from new to old, foreign to domestic, electronic to acoustic, we play it all. Indie Endeavor, Tuesdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
Welcome back. Well, their goal is to make Jacksonville the healthiest city in the nation. Students of the I'm a Star Foundation are hosting their sixth annual Let's Move Jacksonville event next Saturday. This is an all-day festival mirroring First Lady Michelle Obama's movement to end childhood obesity. I'm a Star Foundation Executive Director Betty Burney, also former chair of the Duval County School Board, joins us now along with Jasmine and Jaquez Butler, two local high school students. Hey, everybody.
Hello, hi. Melissa.
Thanks for being here. In a moment, we'll hear from the Butler kids, but first, Betty Burney. Let's Move Jacksonville has a really simple goal, to get us all moving.
To get everyone moving in order that Jacksonville can become one of America's healthiest cities, and we know that one out of every three children in America is obese.
Yes, so tell us about how this event, which is coming up not this weekend, but next weekend, is going to try to get kids that have been sedentary, more active.
Yeah, you know, we've had so many kids who rather play with their video games as opposed to getting active. And we're going to turn that Jacksonville Stadium, the baseball stadium, into just a wonderful track where people can run, jump, play. And even senior citizens, parents can get your inner child on by playing kickball and those kinds of things, getting moving.
Excellent. So Jasmine, Jaquez, Jasmine, you're a sophomore at Lee High School. Jaquez, you're a junior at Raines. How are you guys getting involved in Let's Move Jacksonville?
Well, we are the some of the hosts of the event. So we're going to be going around to the different activities that we have, basketball, soccer, we have bouncy houses, and we're going to be hosting food demonstrations to get everyone at the event moving. And the help them live a healthy lifestyle, get started.
We're also going to be inviting people all over Jacksonville in different communities, going to our churches, local schools, inviting students, and just everybody to come out and have fun on this day.
It does sound like fun. And Betty, it's part of I'm a Star Foundation, which you lead. It's an outlet for kids to unleash their greatness to really, it's a positive youth movement that you've formed.
It's a positive youth movement, and the most important aspect of I'm a Star is that we provide an outlet for young people to provide solutions. And this is a solution. They have a statistic that I'm sure they would like to share with you, which is how they got started on Let's Move Jacksonville. So if one of them would share that statistic.
So the statistic was what we heard in 2010, when we first started Let's Move Jacksonville, was that our generation won't be the generation to outlive our parents, which is sad because if you think about it, our parents would have to bury us. And we just wanted to change that statistic. So we came up with Let's Move Jacksonville, which mirrors Michelle Obama's initiative to combat childhood obesity.
And how big of a problem do you think that is in your high schools?
I think it's a big problem because we have students every day that's playing, like, rather have screen time and rather eat junk food rather than to live a healthier lifestyle. And also because they're not aware. So we just do our first instinct to eat junk food and not go get exercise.
I have that problem with my own kids. It can be, Betty, it can be hard to push against that when everything in the culture is leading kids to not eat well, to be sedentary. We've got a huge obesity problem with our young people.
Yeah, it is really hard. But I think when we have a band of teenagers who've been doing something for 6 years and seeing that it works, saying to their peers, come on, it can work. Here are some ways that we can do it. I think it can make a difference.
And here are some things that the kids have already done. They've started the social media movement Fit Over Fat USA, empowering teens to post about healthy eating and fitness. Earlier this year, the U.S. Surgeon General visited Jacksonville to support this initiative. The students have also started the Rosa Parks Produce Market. That's a farmer's market at the Rosa Parks Transit Station in Jacksonville. They've done that in partnership with the JTA, fresh fruits and vegetables right there at the transit station. Just two of the things they've done. So with all of that said, people need to come out to Let's Move Jacksonville. Tell everyone listening how they can be part of this. This is coming up next weekend, free event, open to the public.
Well, a very interesting way to get involved in Let's Move Jacksonville is this thing that we have Let's Move Monday. The way every Monday, leading up to Let's Move Jacksonville, you would post yourself doing a physical activity with the hashtag Let's Move Monday. And that just helped get you active up until the event, which will be Saturday, December 10th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m.
At the ballpark.
Home of the Jumbo Shrimp.
That's right. Maybe they'll be selling some, not fried shrimp.
Right.
Maybe some boiled or barbecued shrimp. But Let's Move Jacksonville is taking over the baseball grounds next Saturday. Everything from relay races, football, track, basketball, air guitar contests, Michael Jackson dance competitions, healthy food wars, cooking challenges, and more. Come on out to this. It's next Saturday. Betty Burney is the head of the I'm a Star Foundation. Jasmine and Jaquez Butler, two kids involved in Let's Move Jacksonville. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting us, Melissa.
Back in a moment.
On the next Fresh Air, longtime LGBT rights activist Cleve Jones. He worked with Harvey Milk in San Francisco and conceived the AIDS Memorial Quilt. He's had AIDS for many years. Few of his old friends survived the epidemic. His new memoir is meant to document what his generation fought for, won, and lost. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT and Vistar Credit Union are honoring the memory of Fred Rogers with Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used sweaters, jackets, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped at WJCT and all Vistar Credit Union locations and Two Men in a Truck at 8849 Arlington Expressway. For more information, log on to WJCT.org. Contributions will be donated to selected nonprofit facilities within the First Coast area.
Felix Mendelssohn had been reading about Italy, and he was so excited to travel there for the first time. On the day he arrived, he wrote home to his family saying, "Ah, Italy at last. I am basking in happiness." He was inspired to write this, Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony, on the next performance today from APM.
Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Well, making the holidays a little brighter for First Coast kids. Since its founding some 10 years ago, Bright Holidays has raised more than $600,000 to provide clothes, books, toys, and other items for underserved youth in our community. And they operate every season. This is when they come to life, relying solely on volunteers, no fixed expenses. In fact, nearly 100% of donations go directly to benefit disadvantaged children and families. Well, it's that time of year again when Bright Holidays needs your help. CEO Mike Shreve is here with more. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you. I can't believe Bright Holidays has been around for 10 years now, and right. It's gotten bigger every year.
It has, serving about 800 kids this year.
Yeah, so let's talk about what really is driving this, because as I said, everything about Bright Holidays is about helping the children with almost no overhead at all, which is really exciting.
Yeah, we get volunteers to do a lot of the obvious things, buying and sorting the gifts, but we also get volunteers to build a database for us, do our website for us, do our taxes for us, let us use a warehouse. The list goes on and on of volunteers all over the place who make it happen.
Last year, you provided necessities to nearly 1,000 kids working through 48 Jacksonville area schools. You go into the schools to find the kids that need the most.
We do. A couple of our board members are Duval County principals and administrators and teachers and stuff, and they helped us devise what we're even doing, which is what is the need. And now the way we do business is we have partners at the schools. The principal signs on and assigns us a counselor or a teacher or somebody to be our partner. They identify the poor families. And then they ask the parent, "Hey, do you want to be part of this?" Mm-hmm. We have 100% acceptance rate by parents. And then we say, "Okay, tell us all the kids in your family, not just the ones at this school, and give us their shoe size and their pant size, et cetera, so we can go about getting their gifts."
You can be like Santa's elves. These are the types of gifts that you have delivered to each child, all new, everything from shirts, pants, underwear, shoes and socks, books, sleeping bags, grocery gift cards, and toys. Holiday gifts as well.
Right. The sleeping bags is an interesting one. You know, why sleeping bags? The teachers told us, well, some of these kids don't have their own bed, sharing beds with siblings and such. So the sleeping bags are pretty key. Mm-hmm. And then obviously a toy, because we are trying to brighten a holiday. That's the one gift we don't buy. We do toy drives. Providence School does a huge toy drive for us every year. Others contribute toys.
So this is the time when you really need the public's help to support what you're doing. What do you need the most right now?
Actually, what we need the most right now is donations. I mean, we are coming to the head in our program. We've already collected a lot of donations. We've already bought over 10,000 items, and we're in the process of sorting it all out and getting it to the schools to get it to the families. At this point, we would love volunteers, but we're kind of volunteer filled for this year. Next year, we'd love to have you. We really need more donations because, as you said, we give grocery gift cards. Winn-Dixie helps us out there, gives us a break to give gift cards so there can be more food on the table. And we need more donations to be able to do what we hope to do. We already have enough money to buy the gifts, so we've already bought the gifts, but we need donations for groceries.
You need people to step up and write a check.
Right.
Or they can go right online to your website.
Right, brightholidays.org.
Yeah.
One word, brightholidays.org, and there is a place there to make a donation via PayPal, or you can there's a contact number there, which will find you to me, and you could donate toys, or you could talk about other ways to donate, but if you don't have a PayPal account.
Easy to do if you just go to brightholidays.org. As I said, this organization has been around for a little over 10 years on the First Coast because the need is so great. So many families don't even have basic necessities in this community. This is an easy way to help them out at the holiday season. So again, do what you can. Help out Bright Holidays. I helped out Bright Holidays.
Yes, I
hosted a wine tasting event to raise some money for them. Go to brightholidays.org. CEO Michael Shreve, brightening up our day here. So thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
We'll be right back.
Catherine Burns, one of the hosts of the Moth Radio Hour, and I hope you'll join us here on 89.9 WJCT. With true personal stories told live without notes to standing room crowds around the world, Moth stories aren't part of the disposable daily information flow. They stick with you, and you'll even find yourself retelling them. Listen Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on 89.9 WJCT.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, if you thought you knew the story, A Christmas Carol, think again. Because as it turns out, Gladys Cratchit, that's Mrs. Bob Cratchit, is actually a binge drinking and suicidal. When the ghost of Christmas past, present, and future, who, by the way, is an African-American woman, keeps bringing Scrooge and his seasonal Tourette syndrome to the Cratchit's house, well, mayhem ensues. It's all part of Mrs. Bob Cratchit's Wild Christmas Binge, opening up Friday at Players by the Sea. Director Rodney Holmes and star Regina Torres are here to give us a little preview of what's going on inside the Cratchit's household. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. And this is sort of like A Christmas Carol on crack, I guess. This is not the Christmas Carol tale that we have all grown up with.
Absolutely not. No, in no way is it.
All right. So tell me a little bit about the show.
So the show is a spin on A Christmas Carol, the story of Ebenezer Scrooge and Bob Cratchit and all of those lovable characters. And we sort of take it and turn it on its head.
Because we think of the Cratchits as this saintly put upon family.
Yep.
Yeah.
And like, the rest of the family is just not Mrs. Bob.
Okay. Yes. Regine,
they're much nicer than I am.
You play Gladys Cratchit.
I do.
And she's really, how do we describe her?
She's very tired. And she's tired of a family that's all about sickness and pathos and... Her husband is this guy who keeps bringing home children, but we have no way to feed them. So everybody's hungry all the time. And she ends up just not wanting to live in 1840s London.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So, and instead of the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future, three different characters, it's all one character.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what role does that person play?
So the ghost is played by one woman, and she's sort of... She comes in and she has failed ghost school. She's not the best at her job, especially when she comes up against Scrooge and Mr. Cratchit. So,
okay, and this is just more than anything. This just sounds like a funny show. This just sounds like a good time at the theater, which Players by the Sea does such a wonderful job of.
Thank you,
Regina. Is it fun to play this character because she sounds pretty unleashed, I guess, is the way to put this.
Yeah, she's definitely speaks her mind. She She's ready for something new. That's
well, the title
sure.
of the show is Mrs. Bob Cratchit's Wild Christmas Binge.
That's true.
So well, she goes on a binge.
She does go on a binge. She decides that she definitely wants out, and the local pub is a major factor in that.
Are you offering alcohol at this show? I mean, it seems like it's part of the whole vibe of this production.
We've been working on a show drink to serve opening night. So
very nice. And opening night is Friday night.
Correct.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Friday night.
It's going to be a Mrs. Bob Cratchit punch.
Yes.
So very nice. Get into the holiday spirit with Mrs. Bob Cratchit's Wild Christmas Binge. Opening this Friday at Players by the Sea. Tickets at playersbythesea.org. Director Rodney Holmes, star Regina Torres. Break a leg. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and our WJCT app. News updates every day at WJCTnews.org. Next on Diane Rehm, a general election recount is scheduled to start Thursday in Wisconsin, led by Green Party candidate Jill Stein. And President-elect Trump says millions voted illegally. Charges of election fraud and whether recounts could affect the outcome of the presidential election. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again tomorrow at 9 a.m. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.